Hi, everybody. Welcome. This is Julie Knudsen with the podcast Training the Pointing Labrador, episode number 99. And the ones coming, I think I missed a week there because the weather's been good here. And today we have a blizzard coming, so I'm indoors, which is, you know, if the weather's good, it's hard for me to get to these things. So I've got, based on everything that's happening right now, this March in 2020, I had several other things and some listener questions to answer, but I thought, and I have one question looking back, wanting the old how to train by yourself. And I thought, given the current situation where we need to not be in groups, in some places we're not allowed to, and in other places it's a really good idea, to discuss getting work done for your dog when you're by yourself. And right now there's a real quandary. Because I understand they've canceled the Master National. They're looking at canceling intermittent field trials. Everybody right now is just kind of waiting to see. The APLA is also waiting to see how this thing pans out. And if you look at the numbers, I mean, just little, never mind whatever politically based news station you might be watching. If you just look at the statistics of how these little organic things behave, it's going to get a lot worse before it gets better, no matter what. So I think it's safe to assume that we will all be spending a lot more time on our own than we are with our training groups or with our pro or whatever we do. So I thought I would offer some things. I'm by myself too. You know, I have large training groups here on the weekend, and we aren't going to do that anymore. In Colorado, we're one of the states that has the highest number and the most rapid rate of increase. And so it's not safe for everybody to come in and get together and talk about all this stuff. So I will be training by myself substantially. And so I thought we could talk about that and help, you know, some people that are stuck in this situation. Because even though you can't do all the things that you would do in a group, you can accomplish, you know, maybe even more when you're by yourself. So let's talk about, you got you and your dog and maybe a family member or a partner or something that can help and maybe not. But you can continue to go down, you know, whatever road you're going down, whatever progress you'd like to make. If you're got a puppy and you're just getting going on things, then, you know, there's nothing. You can do almost everything that you have to do. And if you're getting ready to get your Master Hunter title or, you know, run the field trials or, you know, the Master Pointing Retriever level of stuff, then there is a lot that you take advantage of this time to really work on stuff that you might not take the time to work on before. So let's just go through that. The first thing, how do you decide what you want to do to make use of your time? You know, and if you're at home, if you're a a restaurant owner, worker or something, and you're just home, you may have a lot of time. And then some people, you know, if you're a teacher, you're working from home. But anyway, for whatever time that you have, let's just talk about it. So you have whatever level your dog is and whatever it is you're doing. And this doesn't have to be the competitive retriever stuff. This can just be, I want a really nice dog. I can take hunting. Or you might have, you know, a whole other breed of dog that you, you know, want to maintain on whatever kind of schedule and whatever things that you do with this dog. To all of you, the first thing you want to do, and I'm going through this myself, is get very clear in your mind. Writing it down is real useful. All right, where am I with my dog? What level are we right now? And then probably whatever level you put, back that down two levels to get where you probably actually are, because everybody overestimates, I think, many times, you know, where their dog actually is in all this stuff. I don't mean that insultingly. I mean that you do your very best, but it's not till you see somebody that's way ahead of you that you go, ooh, I need to kind of go back and review some things. So find out where you are. Now, no matter what you're doing and what your goals are and what level you've already reached, probably, and anyone that knows me knows exactly what I'm going to say. Let's go back to basic obedience. And for those of you that have fancy trick dogs, I'm going to say, let's go back to basic obedience. For one, if you don't have it on your dog, let's begin to work on that. And if you do have it on your dog, then let's find out where your weak spots are in that. So even you fancy guys, for example, assuming that you're training on a fairly serious level, then the words that you use, heel, sit, here, you may have, different words, but I'm going to use those because those are somewhat traditional. So you have the words heel, sit, and here. Find out, does your dog listen for the word and then carry out the act the first time? Or does the dog, are there a number of inputs that you have to have? Let's just use sit, for example. So yeah, your dog knows what sit is. You don't need to work on that. Well, just have your dog heeling at your side, walk along, say sit, keep going. What do they do? You know, if they really have sit, then they're going to sit even though you're moving. If they continue to move with you, then that would tell you that the sit depends on what you say and also what you do. So unless you train particularly for you that you want that kind of thing, and those of us that do the retriever stuff, you don't. Your dog needs to sit 300 yards from you in the middle of the water at a dead run unquestioningly when you hunt or compete. So what's your basic obedience? And for you pointer guys, same thing. When you say that word, is it contingent upon a number of other things? If it is, then you can spend some time. It's not like you fix it in one session, because this has been put into their heads. It is a pattern. It's a habit. They do it probably without thinking. And to reprogram that takes a little bit of time, usually some days and weeks, depending on, how often you work with your dog and how used to learning your dog is. So you can really break down your basic obedience on, does the one word mean it? Or does the one word, regardless, depend on a number of other things being present? One of the things I always hear, almost 100%, with people that are new in bringing dogs or new to this whole training program, is that they do, they're really, really good, unless. And then, other dogs around, the kids, anything, leaf moves, it's afternoon, something. They do everything unless. So let's take the unless out. Let's have these dogs do the sit or the heel or the here, because you said it, period. And so that's never the dog's fault. That is not the dog's fault. Even with the ADHD crazies, with time, you can make sure that they do out of a habit. They hear you and they carry out the action, without having to take in a bunch of other things going on at the same time. So there's a lot of people that can just work on that. Have your dog honor what you ask them to do the first time by hearing you say it clearly one time. And of course, there's a whole way you do that. I've done obedience podcasts earlier. I can't really break that down, but teach them. When I say sit, it doesn't matter about anything else. It doesn't matter what I do. It doesn't matter if there's things around us. Sit means sit. There are no downsides to teaching a dog to hear something and work to execute it. There are no downsides to that. If it's dependent on a number of other things, then you always have to have those number of other things present. And there are places either where you cannot do that, or it just shouldn't be necessary. It takes too much time or effort. So get your basic obedience. One on, does the dog hear something and then do it? Again, if they don't, instead of being mad at the dog, going, oh, look at that, he's not very good, you've done something to make this dog think, that sit means I hear it, then you stop, then the leash jerks, and then I sit. So this is going to force some real self-awareness on your part. And again, like I said, we have a little bit more time, or we're by ourselves a lot more. This is a fantastic time to take advantage of finding out what you're doing to contribute to some of your dog's responses and behavior that you don't care for. And I'll throw another thing before we move on to some further down the line. I'll throw something else. One thing that I've paid particular attention to and the last, I'd say, couple years, I guess, is when people, particularly people that are new to serious dog training, when they have a dog and, you know, basic obedience, heel and sit, okay, when the dog kind of does it with them, when they walk with them and then they sit, and they think that, I mean, they're very happy with that. When they throw something and the dog goes out and gets it, most of the time, not always, but most of the time, goes and gets it and brings it back, most of the time, not always, and they come back and sit, oh, and so then we want to work on steady. Look, he's retrieving, so I know steady is real important. I'm going to get ahead of the game, right? So I'm going to make this dog sit, even though he's not real passionate about going. Or he is passionate about going, but he just doesn't think while he does it. He just runs out there crazy and then runs around and finally comes back. Oh, let's make him steady. I would encourage people, it's not just saying, oh, look, my dog's doing it. This is good. That's that's not exactly it. You have to have a dog, when, especially in this retriever game that we play, and I don't care if your dog just hunts. When a bird drops in a difficult or weird place or something they're not accustomed to, when a bird drops or you throw a bumper and it drops in a funny place, what you need is a dog that is very focused on the fall of that bird or bumper, very focused on it, and their mind is on that. And out in contrast to what else, some more stuff I'll say in a minute, you want their focus on that. Then when they go out there, they are going to be focused on that location, and they're going to know that if they don't come up with it real quickly, they've got to look harder and maybe change their hunt pattern just a little bit and start to look in different ways and start to use maybe a little more eyes or a little more nose or in places that aren't, it's not expecting. That requires real mental focus. But when you're just out there tossing bumpers and they go out and it's nice out on the grass or the, you know, bear, and they come and they bring back and now I'm going to make him steady, and you have a dog that understands the motions of retrieving, the motions, but they do not have the subtleties and the true effectiveness of retrieving. Because for these guys, it should be a highly skilled job. Even for just hunters, it should be a highly skilled job. But when you just go out and chuck stuff out and they kind of get it, and if most of the time they do, because most of the time it's easy to find, and then they come back and they're, okay, they went around behind me, did a little circle, okay, then they sat down, everything's good. And you have this big sloppy mess. It may not seem to you a sloppy mess. To me, I would be going, oh my goodness, we really need to fix that. Not because I just like them to be precise and military-like, but because when they're like that, that mind, you are seeing a reflection of how their thoughts are, what's going on in their head. And it's kind of helter-skelter. And helter-skelter is never good. There is never anywhere where helter-skelter thinking is the optimum thing for you. So when you are working on these fundamentals and the more dynamic ones, like just a single retrieve, it would be great if you could keep your eye, work on the dog having some focus before you start, you know, doing, making them steady or doing all this other stuff. They need to be focused. And the only way that they can be focused, one, is if you are, and two, is if you require the work that you do with them to be that way, beginning with basic obedience. If he's dragging you up to wherever you're going to go and throw stuff, and then they circle around and they do all this kind of stuff, again, that is a reflection of what's going on in their head. And so if you don't address the problem before you even do the retrieves, then your retrieve is going to be equally and maybe a little bit more, because they're on their own now. They're out there by themselves. So just to do a single retrieve, go out, sit your dog down, throw something, just, you know, depending on their level, throw something that's just, you know, it's somewhat of a challenge to find, or not. Sit, throw an easy one. Throw a big white bumper out there on the dirt or the grass. Do they sit or not sit? What are they doing? Are they just crazy wild? Because if they're crazy wild right there, they're going to be crazy wild out looking for it. And then, so we have a complete helter-skelter thing going. So it would be, and it takes time. You don't do this in a day. You do this over a period of weeks and even months to get them to get collected and get in their head and think about this thing that is their job that they're going to do. You can't do this with people around. You can't do this in a big, large training group. You need to do this on your own. And then when you do go to a training group, then you have it in place already. So focus and not just mindless everything. Starts with basic obedience. Starts with listening to one single word and not a series of things. And then carry it over to your retrieving. Now, I talked about being steady. If your dog has a moderate or low interest in retrieving, do not work on steady, because steady is not going. And when we want them to love to go, we don't want to correct them and make them not go. So it's really common sense. So if you have kind of a disinterested or moderately interested dog, don't throw very many, one or two, no matter what. Don't use this for their exercise. And do whatever it takes to build a little bit of passion and excitement and enjoyment of this. You cannot make a dog steady that doesn't want to go, because they're happy to be steady because they don't want to go. When you're making a dog steady, that by definition is one that doesn't want to be steady, that really wants to race out there and get it. So if you have a young dog, and I've gotten several of these in, moderate interest in retrieving. And so all this basic, you got to do it. Now I do make them do basic obedience because the interactions have to be good. But when it comes to the retrieving, I'm going to rub that thing and thump it on them and get them excited and toss it out, or one that bounces so the bounce is appealing. The first thing you have to get is a real interest in this, a real enjoyment of this, long before you start that focusy thing that I was talking about. So that's another thing to look at. If you got a young dog, you have to build a passion for this. And be careful about, don't confuse helter-skelter crazy with passion, right? They may be, a dog may have both, and a dog may have passion and not be helter-skelter, or a dog may be just a helter-skelter thinking and have low passion. So you've got to know what you've got with this dog. You have to know, because if they're just helter-skelter, and I've seen this, you throw the bumper out, and they take off, it looks like a passionate dog, right? And they run right on by it, and then they go sniff this and eat that and grab that, and then they see you're getting mad, and then they remember, oh, I think I'm supposed to pick that up. I don't know. And they're all over the place. Okay, that's not a dog with a passion for retrieving. That's a dog that's just crazy and just want to run out there without a single cohesive thought in their mind. So it would be useful if you got a feel for what you have. If you have one of those helter-skelter guys, then your obedience is going to be the most important thing you do. And if you do, when you do throw for them, throw so that they're on a cord and not very long. We're not going for distance. We're not getting them ready to run a field trial when we're just trying to get them to like retrieving or understand what it is. So have them on a long leash or a cord. They go get it, bring them back with it or without. So that they learn, you go out and then you come back. That's what you do. You don't go out and then blow up and run all around while I'm trying to get you to go get the bumper. So if you break these activities down and see it, like I said, instead of looking what this is what I want to get out of this, stop all that, step back and see what your dog is telling you. Yeah, is this a helter-skelter dog or is it a focused dog? Is it a dog that's mildly interested or very interested? You have to understand all of those things before you decide what you're going to undertake with your dog. And with all dogs, low interest, high interest, helter-skelter, totally focused, basic obedience is something that you do have to have. And I know some people might disagree with that, but I think that you must teach them to dial in, collect their thoughts a little bit. And they all can be, even the really crazy ones, unless they're certifiable, put them in a padded room crazy, which every now and then you do get one of those. But you have to, and obedience is the one safe, good place to be. You have to walk next to me, and you have to sit when I stop. And when I'm standing right in front of you and say, here, you have to come to me and sit or heel around to my side. And I use those simple activities to make them focus on what I'm saying and carry out the act. And with the wild and crazy guys, okay, it might take weeks. But that's the only way that you can begin to get them to develop a little bit of cohesive thinking. And if you have a dog, let's go the other way. If you have a dog that's not real interested in any of this, they can still obey and they can still heel and sit. They have to do that. So you may have to be a little more upbeat and make it, you know, you have to, now I didn't say loosen the standards and drop the standards. They still need to heel, sit, and come to you. But try to make it just a little bit more interesting by you being enjoying this and having some fun with it and turning it into something that's enjoyable. But they still need to understand when I say sit, you have to sit. When I say heel, you need to be walking with me or come to me. Or if I say here, come to me. Work on that stuff with all of these guys. Then whatever you do next is going to be a lot easier because you've taught them, hey, I need to focus on you and I need to keep in my own head and not do the wild and crazy thing. And with little puppies, people seem to like that. And it's nice that they're energetic, but if you let helter-skelter thinking just continue, which is what dog parks and dog daycare does with animals, if you let that grow, if that's the highlight of their day, then you're going to get more and more of that. And then later on, you're going to have to try and crank down on that, and it doesn't really make sense to the dog. So that's a big deal that everyone at every level can do with their dogs. Then there's, again, the retrieving part that I talked about. See, you know, if your dog is consistently working hard to focus and hunt up things, and if they understand I need to wait, and waiting doesn't mean scooting, waiting means sitting. So if you have a scooter or somebody that's, you know, likes to move around a lot, teach them not to. Moving around a lot is not make things better for you. Sitting and focusing is the optimal thing for these guys. So that's a thing that you can work on. And again, understand, it's not like 2 days I got it. Because that ain't going to translate to if you're running an event and there's flyers and guns and other working dogs and honor dogs. They need to be conditioned through repetition, consistency, and time to do the thing that you want them to do. So this is a great opportunity for that. This is also a great opportunity to teach the dog the mechanics that you're going to use, let's say, on multiple marks. Now, when you don't have anybody out there throwing, you can do hand-thrown doubles and hand-thrown triples and hand-thrown quads and whatever you want. You can do that, but just before you get to my dog can count to three, this is a great time to work on the mechanics of that. Now, different people have different mechanics, and I'll explain what I'm talking about that with mechanics. People have different things with that. Well, I'll just explain what I do. It doesn't mean this is the thing to do, but it's what I do because I am a simplicity monster. I like things to be as simple as possible so that all of the energy and focus is out there in the field, not in us arguing here at my side. So let's just say, okay, your dog, you've spent a long time and your dog is very focused on a single mark retrieve, very focused. And they sit there and don't start doing, if your dog doesn't sit there and be steady on one, do not then start two or three, because now whatever slop you have is going to exponentially grow and be really sloppy. And so, you know, I just like to avoid that because I hate correcting all of that. So first you have a dog that sits at your side, doesn't move, watches, sits there and stares at that, isn't swinging their head all over the place, waits to be sent, goes out, gets it, comes back, heels right into position, sits there and waits for you to take it. When you can do that consistently and routinely on one, okay, now let's go to hand thrown two. Now, I think dogs need to handle, if you're actually really doing doubles, dogs should be able to handle so that if suddenly they kind of take a crazy thought and want to go back where they've already been, you can stop it. And so that's my opinion on that. But hand-thrown doubles you can do with dogs that are force-fetched and have learned that they need to sit there and focus. So here, let me talk about mechanics. And do whatever you've found to work or whatever your pro tells you. But I'm just going to give you an example of thinking it through by what I do. So if I'm going to do a hand-thrown double, I always bring up my dog needs to be facing their shoulders and hips the same direction my shoulders and hips are. We sit down in a specific direction, which is going to be the last bumper down. That way that dog knows, because I don't like them moving online, that dog knows that's the direction I will be going first, right? That we walk in, we walk up, sit down, and we are facing straight out in front of you, right? Now, for one, let's just teach it. This is how you start teaching. If you haven't done this stuff, you teach one. Walk up, sit down, throw the bumper. Okay, you throw it out there. The first thing out of my mouth isn't the dog's name to go. I'll say, you know, sit, good dog, nice shot, beautiful day. I'll say something so they don't go because sound came out of my mouth. They have to listen for their name, just like they have to listen for sit or heel or hear. So I will throw one out where they can see it, actually. When we're starting this, we're just starting throwing doubles. I throw it out so they can see it. They come get it, come back. Depending on the dog, how quickly they get things, if it's one that's just kind of moderate, I get stuff but takes a little bit, I'll do repeat that exact same thing. We'll do that again. Okay, now they come back. Now we are going to face, let's say, 90 degrees away from that in another direction. So the dog is sitting facing. We're 90 degrees off where they've been going. And I let them sit there. Now I'm going to throw that bumper the original place, which is 90 degrees off of where we're facing. I will throw that bumper out there. And the dog's head is looking at it, right or left, whatever's optimal for vision here. The dog sees it. I don't let them move. I enforce sit. And I let them look at it for quite a while, so I know it's in their head. And then directly in front of us, exactly the way the dog is facing, I will throw the second one. Wait, of course, send them out for that one. Now, you have to have these far enough apart that they're not going to just do a hard right or hard, you know, 90-degree turn and go back and get that one they've already gotten twice. Okay. I make sure that that's enough out of their view that they run out and get that last one down. And when they come back, I am facing the next one. They always go where we're facing. They always go the direction they're facing. And so when that dog is returning, I am facing that second bumper. So they come in, heel and square with me. Don't get in a hurry taking anything out of their mouth because you want to be in their head. Right? It's not about the mechanics of what we're doing. It's about that dog's head. So they come in and they are now sitting down looking right at that white bumper again. So I just calmly, quietly take that other bumper away. I don't thump it on the ground behind me so that they want to turn around and see what that was. I just take it away and hold it behind me. Wait till they're looking out there real good at that one. And then I send them for that one. So those are the mechanics. And then pretty soon I don't have to do the memory bird. You know, the memory bumper, I don't have to practice that very much anymore. When I can, I'll just do cold ones. So, but what I'm working on isn't marking right now because we got white bumpers out on the dirt. But what I'm doing is teaching them the mechanics. Wherever we walk up and face, that's where you're going to go. And something may be thrown one direction or another, but the last one is going to be thrown directly in front of you. That's where you head. And then I will be lined up on the next shortest one, and send you for that. So your dog begins, are developing a communication with your dog on multiples that wherever you're facing is where you're going, that you don't move around, and that this is, we're not hurrying. I wait until that dog tells me, I see it. If you do these kind of things, whether it's marks out in the field with people, or these little hand-thrown things, and you do it quickly without the dog mentally settling in, then we start head swinging, right? Then we start, there's one, where's the next one? And they're in a big hurry looking around because this is fun and there's a lot of action. Never let that develop Because if you do compete, or if you're hunting, I don't care. You need the focus. You need them to focus on where a difficult bird went down. And if, boy, within 2 seconds or something more action happens, they learn not to focus, but just to be looking for everything all the time. So right here on this hand-thrown beginning stuff is where you teach them this is calm. This is very quiet. And you focus, and I never send you until you tell me, I got it. And then you go. So everyone's always in a hurry on this stuff, right? Oh, I threw a triple. My dog does this. And if I watch that and the dog is scooting and moving and selecting which one they want to get themselves and all this stuff, then you have helter-skelter stuff going on your retrieving. And that is a created situation by the handler, not the dog. So that's why you don't ever move to two until you've got one with no helter-skelter at all. Now, they might be sitting there vibrating because they want to go and they love this so much, and that's fine. But their mind can't be helter-skelter. And if your dog is that way, then you can't go to doubles or more. You know, that's what people think. I'll just add more. That'll settle them down. They'll just give them more to think about. That's the last thing they need. They need to acquire the skill of collecting their own thoughts and directing all that energy that they have on one thing. So this is something that you can work on you to get you that way. And when you are, then your dog will reflect that and also become that way. And this does, again, this isn't 2 days, I got it. It's not. If in 2 days your dog is doing well, then you've got that kind of scotch taped on there. It isn't until a month or two from now of consistency where it is becoming their automatic behavior and automatic response. So let me move on to the next thing. Taking a lot of time here for those of you with dogs that handle. Okay. This is a phenomenal time when there's not people around and a lot of action to do casting and lining drills. And everybody goes, oh yeah, I do those. And again, I'm going to take the same level of mindfulness and detail and focus on this that I have all this other stuff that I'm talking about. So casting drills. Okay, I don't do the baseball diamond where you have all kind of bumpers out there all over the place. And there's a lot of distraction when you do that. Okay. And if it works for you, do it. Okay. I'm not saying it's the wrong thing to do. I just, queen of simple, I don't do that. Even my very fanciest dogs that I have that, you know, win field trials and master hunter and all that stuff, I don't do baseball diamond. We'll go out calmly. They sit down. They got to face me, right? Square, straight. And I'll throw a slight angle, a couple bumpers, just a slight angle back. Distance is not the goal here, right? They're probably just a good hand throw, visible on a slight right angle back and a slight left angle back. So they're probably out there, I don't know, 20 feet apart, 15, something like that out there. And that dog has to square, and I put up my right angle back, and they go, have to get that one. They can't roll over there and get the left one because they see it. Until that dog, I just do those two angle backs like that. And I practice that until they watch me. And I'll tell you, this is kind of one of my secrets on handling in competition, is I'll sit very straight with them. In the beginning, lined up with them. In the beginning, I will move one step over to the right, and then I'll cast that right angle back. And then when I do the left one, I'll move one step over to the left from center, lined up with them. And cast that. I begin to teach them that my hand is the cast, but that I am influencing with my body position. And so I use that a lot, particularly when they're saying, I'm going to go get the one on the left. I'm going to go get the one on the left. I really, you know, they get a penchant for one bumper in this stuff. And I don't know why, but they do. And they tell you, I want that one on the left. I will take just that slight step to the right, facing them, and cast to that right. I've just told them twice, you're going to go to the right. And, you know, you have to stop them immediately and bring them back to that center thing and make sure. And if you're having trouble, then toss another bumper where you need them to go and then cast them. So we're not using any electricity on this stuff. We are not correcting. This is a teaching thing. So if they tell you that they're going to go to the left and you cast them to the right and they go to the left, they told you that's where they're going to go. So once again, you got to get in their head, folks. You got to teach them, I understand you want to go to the left. I want you to go to the right. And here's where you begin to use your body. And then again, if they go wrong, stop them, put them right back in the center again. Maybe toss a bumper where you need them to go. So you're going, it's this one, doofus, it's this one. And then cast them over there. Take it, your body is an influence, because remember, dogs speak by body language. So a slight step that is the direction that they need to turn to go on back is a communication form. Now later on, when you're in the last series, right, and you're running a water blind or a land blind, and they really want to get out right over here on the right, and you need them to move to the left, and you move your body where they can see you. If they're real far out, you got to move a little bit more and influence them. You're going to be going this direction. So this is where you set up very subtle communication. But it can only happen if you are completely collected in your own thoughts and completely aware of what this dog is telling you and responding to that. And this stuff is hard. I mean, if you've never done it before, it's like taking a calculus test, because it's a lot of focus. But if you want your dog to focus like that, you've got to do it. So just get those two angle backs left and right. So you can sometimes if you just take a step and then say the word back, they'll take the perfect cast and go. And don't be using verbals here. I think verbals are terrible. Because if you give verbals, then now we have a two-cued command. Not only do you follow my hand, but you follow my voice. And that's unnecessary. Just like you don't have to sit and stop and do all, say it and do it. Have it be a one-cue thing. Just like in obedience, it should be a one cue thing. In obedience, it's what you say or your whistle. Out here, it's when your hand goes up. And it should go up calmly and focused, just like you want the dog to be thinking. Not something flung into the air and then super high energy deal. Or not creepily slow so they have to wait to make sure what it is. Just a nice calm cast without verbals. Unless you absolutely have to. And if this dog is force-fetched and been trained and stuff, then they're going to go. So make this quiet so it's nothing but what they're thinking and what they're watching from you. Because now we're communicating with our body. Don't use verbals, because if they're 200 yards out and the wind's blowing and they're in running stuff, they aren't going to, and you throw an arm up and they're waiting to hear you, they're not going to hear you. I've gotten many dogs like that in for training. I run, they're kind of trained by their owners, and I run them and I throw my hand up on the blind and they just sit there because I didn't do it right. You don't just throw the hand out, but you have to say something. So that's the first thing I do is get them out of that. You just take my cast by my hand, okay? I don't have to do two things to ask you to take an angle back cast. So practice that stuff. And when that gets where they're really good, add some overs. Add some overs, throw an over and then cast them to the angle back, not the over, so that they don't respond to where you threw something necessarily or what the closest or the most obvious thing is, but they respond to your cast. And again, if you want to complicate it with the baseball diamond, you can. But I don't do that because I like the subtlety and I like to just get repetition on these things so that they go take the exact cast that I want when we're doing that. And so I'll add some overs and then the angle backs and then maybe just have a back pile and some angle 45 degree angles. Not when I say angle back, I'm talking 10 degrees, 15 degrees at most, not very far off of the back thing. If you get, and then your dog will have trouble with the left over or something. There's always one direction that seems to be very problematic for them for some reason. Find out which one that is, right? And then there's something that you can work on. Not all by itself. You still, if it's a leftover, then make sure you have the right angle back and a leftover. And you just kind of work on that and until the leftover is accomplished. But if you're not focused on this, then you don't even know that they have trouble with a leftover. So you can see how this casting drills can become a place of high precision and high level communication if you go out and do this. Again, no electricity. The dog is not screwing you over ever. If they tell you they're going to go somewhere and then you cast them and they go right where they told you, that's your fault, not theirs. You have to be able to communicate to that dog, nobody, you're not going to go there. This is where you have to go. Awesome learning place for both of you. And then lining drills, for those of you that handle, you know what I'm talking about. On lining drills, white bumpers are good. You can enter, you know, use white and white. You know, they see orange if you're in grass, not so well. Some do, some don't. But lining drills is, again, where you develop your communication. On the casting ones, it's you're communicating exactly what direction I want you to go. Very subtly, right? With just one cue. And you practice and practice until it becomes kind of an automatic response in them. And they are not bamboozled by something else that's there. They just know when I get that cast, this is the direction I go. Same thing on the lining drills, okay? You're square, your dog is square. If you don't have that, that's basic obedience. Go back to that. But when you have bumpers out in front of you, distance is not the goal. Distance makes it more difficult. So in the beginning, when you're teaching and developing this communication between the two of you, have them where they're readily seeable. And have them far enough apart that it's clear which one you're sending them to. You send them on a back. I suggest you use your hand so they learn to trust the hand. Hand doesn't go right in front of their face and obscure their view. Hand is more of a presence above them and out front so they can clearly see what you want. Do not have the hand be the dispenser. I see people put their hand down and say back, right? So now we got two cues to go. You don't want two cues to go. You just want one. The hand is merely a directional reassurance. Put the hand down. They're going, I see the one. Then you send them. Don't have a two-cue send. People put their hand down. It's like a Pez dispenser. Boom, dog takes off when their hand goes down. Careful about that. Again, now you got two cues. Are you aware of when you double-cue and triple-cue dogs? They are better off if they just have one. And so that's you getting into your head and thinking about kind of some of the helter-skelter stuff that you've got going. So do the lining drill until they know I always go where I'm faced. I'm always square on. I go to that, then I go to the next one. Don't try to make this tricky in the beginning until you guys are perfect, until they always go to the one that you send them. And then you can start to bring them a little bit closer together or a little further out, and eventually kind of the both of the things. So now, I mean, we do this. I do it with the good guys, where I'm not even moving the body. I'm just moving their eyes from one to the other. And, you know, with those, some of these guys, you can do that stuff. Just move their eyes off of one bumper and onto the other because they're close enough together and or far enough apart that their body's almost lined up for all of them all in one spot. And move their eyes. And don't pick the middle one out. I don't do that. Don't pick them outside. Now the middle. I kind of go sequentially, left to right or right to left. That picking that middle one out, yeah, they might be looking and then you send them and it's the wrong one and you call them back. That's screwing with a dog. So I go from one side to the other and the other way around so that I know which one they're looking at when I send them. Because when... And they'll tell you there, too, if you guys ever do these lining drills. You have them lined up perfect. They're looking at the one on the left, and their eyes look quick over to the right and back, right? And you wait for that, and then they're looking again. And then one more time, their eye looks, they just told you, I'm going to go over to the right. And then they do, and then you call them back, and you're mad, and no electricity, none here. This is teaching thing, okay? So that was your fault. They told you where they were going to go. So you see what I mean? This is where the two of you develop this really strong communication that's going to be very useful in difficult retrieving situations. And this takes some time, et cetera, et cetera. So I've gone over a lot of that. The woe thing also, you know, woe conditioning. I don't woe in the field. So those of you who do, don't listen to me on this. But again, you've got all, now it's just you and your dog, which is where you should do the teaching stuff. This is where you can teach them. Woe means don't move your feet and begin to add. You can come up with all kinds of creative and interesting temptations. Woe is teaching them once you're on point, you don't move regardless of temptation. So here's where you can spend time doing a lot of that kind of thing. In really working the stability that you're eventually going to need in the upland field. But I've gone over that in a lot of detail. So for all of us. Now you guys know what I'm going to be doing. If I'm not force fetching them, then we're doing obedience and this kind of stuff in the bad weather, and also right now kind of training alone a lot. And I'm lucky I have water right out the back door. So a lot of these, I don't do casting drills in the water because they don't really take literal casts in the water most of the time. Water's a little different than land. But I do lining drills in the water, you know, to teach them to angle something and take a corner and don't get out too early and all that kind of stuff. So those of you lucky enough to that, here's a place where you get real into that, into the detail. Most of all, to kind of sum this up, I want you guys to understand that the multiple cue thing can be confusing. If you have one cue for everything, sit, heel, hear, whoa, back, you know, casting. If you just have one cue, it's much easier to communicate with your dog, and it's much easier for them to understand clearly what it is you want. So, and you know, if another person runs your dog, I run other people's dogs all the time, and they got all cues I don't know, you know, and I just make it get to one thing so that it'll be simple. And you know, if you like to have multiple cues, that's fine, but it doesn't help you. It just is what you like. It's much easier on the dog if they only have to listen or look for one thing. So look at what you're doing and see if you find ways where there's multiple things you're doing to communicate a single thought to their dog, to your dog. Because a lot of times problems kind of germinate right in there and grow into bigger things. So that's my offering of the day. I strongly encourage people to train by themselves right now. If you look at the statistics on this thing, folks, it's kind of a nasty deal, and we've got a lot more bad stuff coming before we get to level out and get things better. So take advantage of this opportunity to do some really constructive and valuable and rewarding kind of work with your dog. And everybody stay healthy out there.